Topic 1, Due Process of Law, Part 1. This is Lynn Kastner, Executive Director of the Minnesota Civil Liberties Union, bringing you the 17th program in a series of educational programs produced by the Minnesota Civil Liberties Union. In this first program, we are going to discuss the problems of civil liberties on the local level, particularly as it has to do with police practices, and the controversy surrounding the desirability of civilian advisory or civilian police review boards. The consequences of unlawful police activity are serious. Both illegal activities by the police and actions which are legal but seriously infringe upon citizens' rights destroy necessary cooperation between citizens and police in any community. The fact is, in metropolitan areas particularly, many thousands of arrests without a warrant are made yearly, which cannot be justified upon the legal grounds given. In Minnesota, the Supreme Court on a number of occasions has had occasion to comment and to ask that administrative procedures be adopted to guarantee the citizens the right to, when they are subject to arrest or to search, that officers, when time and circumstances permit, obtain the necessary legal documents for searches and arrests in minor crimes. The fact that in all but a few cases, no public outcry is outraised may be attributable to a number of factors. First, the ignorance of the affected members of the public as to their rights, the law, and the corresponding duties of the police in this area. The inability, in any case, of those arrested to vindicate their rights. Thirdly, the economic and social condition of those arrested. And fourthly, the possible need for a period of temporary detention for investigation on suspicion only. This latter case is a serious problem of civil liberties in many areas of the country. The practice of arrests for suspicion raises serious constitutional questions. The most extensive recent study of arrest on suspicion, or arrest for investigation, was conducted in Washington, D.C. by a committee of three lawyers over a 16-month period. They found that arrests on suspicion, rather than on probable cause, did not require police to take prisoners before a judge, that no clear standards govern such arrests, and that many persons were detained for extended periods of time without permission to notify family or attorney. The practice of holding on suspicion seems a clear declaration that at the time of detention, enforcement officers could not produce sufficient evidence of probable cause to support the issuance of an arrest warrant. Present fingerprinting and photographing practices are most undesirable when used in regard to persons detained and never subsequently held for trial, or persons held or booked on suspicion, or especially for persons who are falsely arrested. In Philadelphia, through the cooperation between the Police Advisory Board and the Police Department, some procedures for clearing the files of the prints of such persons should be looked into and established in other areas. Even though prints remain on file with state police and Federal Bureau of Investigation, any citizen would receive an important measure of satisfaction when he is assured that the local prints are destroyed. In a recent Harvard Law Review note by Harold Barrell and Marcus Sisk, an extensive article on the administration of complaints by civilians against the police was published. The note points out that in every American city there is some system, typically administered by the police department itself, for processing civilian complaints against police officers. Basically, these complaint review systems encompass the reception and investigation of complaints, the determination of their validity, and the imposition of certain sanctions. Various local police departments perform these functions in a variety of ways. The system's formality and complexity generally increase in proportion to the size of the police force. Those concerned with police administration have recognized the importance of a carefully designed complaint procedure. Yet there has been to date no large-scale study of the review systems, and few departments are abreast of developments in other cities. Thus, a major purpose of this note is to describe in some detail the steps in a full complaint review system, drawing upon the collective experience of a large number of police departments, and to evaluate them in light of the purposes of complaint review. In Minneapolis, in October of 1965, the Law Enforcement Committee of the Mayor's Commission on Human Relations heard a report from Police Chief Calvin Hawkinson on the present complaint procedure as used by the Minneapolis Police Department. It was explained that first, complaints may involve police service, the conduct of a police officer, or the use of police equipment. Secondly, complaints may come from anyone. Even anonymous complaints will be investigated. It was explained that complaints may be brought in by phone, letter, or in person to a precinct station, police headquarters, the mayor's office, or to another interested agency like the Human Relations Commission. A statement is taken either in question and answer or in summary form and includes the dates, times, places, names, addresses, and phone numbers of complainants, the names of witnesses, the badge numbers of officers being complained against. The complainant and witnesses are normally questioned by a deputy inspector. Experienced criminal investigators gather physical evidence and even submit it to the state crime lab for analysis if this is necessary. If the investigation shows the complaint is unfounded, the complainant is told so and told why. If he is not satisfied, he may appeal to the mayor. If a complaint does indicate a probable violation of state law, city ordinance, civil service rules, or police department rules, a departmental hearing is scheduled. It was explained further that if a law violation is involved, the evidence is turned over to the city or county attorney, and the departmental hearing is not held until after the officer's trial. Otherwise, it is held at once. Such a departmental hearing is held in the police chief's office with the deputy inspector of police, the officer's unit commander, the officer, and in some cases, the complainant and the witnesses. Charges are read, testimony is taken, and the officer is given a chance to answer. Then the officer leaves the room, the chief consults with the deputy inspector and the unit commander on the evidence and the officer's service record and possible punishment. In the law review note, which I mentioned a few minutes ago, the authors discuss the general situation in the country of civilian police advisory boards, or police review boards, as they are sometimes called. The note points out, quote, "Citizens' complaints are administered by groups of civilians in no way affiliated with the police departments in only two cities. The first police advisory board was established in Philadelphia in October 1958, and in 1963 a similar board was organized in Rochester, New York," unquote. Since that time, Mayor Lindsay, recently elected in New York, has moved to establish a civilian review board in New York City. Continuing in the note, quote, "There is a provision for a police advisory board in the city charter of York, Pennsylvania, and a five-man board was appointed there in 1960. This board is now defunct because when its term expired in 1961, the new mayor failed to appoint a new board. A civilian board was also appointed in Minneapolis, but has never functioned, having been advised by council that its unofficial status was not sufficient to clothe its members with an absolute privilege in defamation actions. Attempts to establish civilian review boards are now being pressed in several cities. For example, in Baltimore, Maryland, Chicago, Illinois, Cincinnati, Ohio, Columbus, Ohio, Denver, Colorado, Detroit, Michigan, Houston, Texas, Kansas City, Los Angeles, Louisville, Kentucky, Newark, New Jersey, Providence, St. Louis, San Diego, Schenectady, Toronto, Washington, and Wilmington, Delaware. Recently, the Minnesota Civil Liberties Union Board issued a report on civilian police review boards, which I will discuss a little later in the program. Continuing the note, quote, "In Denver, for example, the newly elected mayor has promised to institute a board on the Philadelphia model. A bill introduced in the California legislature in 1963 called for the establishment of civilian police review boards in all cities of 50,000 or more population. Efforts to establish civilian complaint boards have typically been accompanied by emotionally charged struggles. Advocates of civilian systems have capitalized upon the public indignation arising when well-publicized incidents of police abuse are followed by exoneration of the accused officer by an internal review system. Opponents have often accused supporters of subversive connections. A broad base of public pressure in favor of a civilian board has thus far been essential to successful attempts to establish such a system. In Rochester, for example, the prime impetus for a civilian board came from an alliance of clergymen of all faiths. The most outspoken critic of civilian board proposals has been the Fraternal Order of Police, a national benevolent society. A highly respected police service organization, the International Association of Chiefs of Police, has also gone on record as being opposed to civilian review boards. In Philadelphia, the Police Advisory Board has now been in operation over 5 years and provides a valuable practical basis for a general evaluation of the concept of a civilian board. The original plan of the board's creator, a former mayor, Richardson Dilworth, called for establishment of the board by a city ordinance. When the city council failed to approve the mayor's proposed ordinance, he established the board as an adjunct of his office under powers granted him in the city charter. The Philadelphia board, then, exists entirely at the sufferance of the mayor. Originally comprised of 5 members and a salaried part-time executive secretary, the board now has 8 members and the secretary. Academic, legal, religious, and labor interests are represented in the board's membership. The first executive secretary, an attorney, was replaced in 1963 by a prominent Negro minister. Under the Philadelphia system, complaints must be filed in person within 90 days of the alleged incident at the board's office, which is in a private building removed from police department offices. Not only aggrieved parties, but any interested person or organization may file a complaint. Complaints are received by the executive secretary, who may either attempt to arrange an informal settlement or forward the complaint to the police commissioner with a request that it be investigated. The request to investigate is invariably accepted, although the commissioner is technically free to refuse. The report of the investigation by the department's Community Relations Division is studied by a subcommittee consisting of the lawyers on the board, who determine whether a hearing is warranted. Even if the subcommittee recommends against a hearing, one is held if the complainant requests. The board has no subpoena power, but the complainant brings his own witnesses to the hearing. The accused officer is notified of the hearing through the police commissioner's office and given a copy of the complaint. The Fraternal Order of Police always provided counsel for the accused. If the complainant has counsel, the hearing is adversary in nature. If not, the board examines parties and witnesses on the complainant's behalf. The decision in the case is by majority vote. The accused and the complainant are notified of the result, but normally no formal opinion is written explaining the decision. The board's recommendation of punishment is sent to the mayor and the police commissioner. The commissioner normally follows the recommendations, but the mayor will informally arbitrate the decision if the commissioner disagrees with the board's recommendation. The note evaluates the Philadelphia experience as follows. The Police Advisory Board has been successful in 2 major respects. First, the board has been able to apply citizen judgment to police policies and activities. Where the question of drawing the proper boundary between effective law enforcement and the protection of civil liberties is involved, it seems proper that independent civilian judgment be given a formal role. The Philadelphia Board not only passes judgment on police conduct on a case-by-case basis, but has also assisted in the formulation of broader policies when patterns of improper practice have emerged through experience with numerous complaints. A Philadelphia department has formulated a new set of rules governing the use of handcuffs during arrest with a view that judicious use of manacles could prevent injuries and unnecessary embarrassment as a result of recommendations of the review board. A second major achievement of the Philadelphia board has been the development of an informal procedure of complaint settlement. As originally conceived, the main function of the board was to hold hearing. The first executive secretary, however, found that he could use his influence with the police and the complainants to effect informal settlement satisfactory to all parties. In many cases of minor grievances, the complainant may not care whether the officer involved is punished but seeks only an apology or the eradication of an unjustified police record entry. In such cases, informal settlement in Philadelphia has proved workable. Moreover, formal adversary proceedings are not necessary for the resolution of lesser offenses, such as discourtesy or swearing. In several respects, the Philadelphia experience demonstrates the need for improvements in police advisory board practice." Unquote. The note continues in its evaluation of the Philadelphia experience and points out, quote, "The most important measures are needed to increase public awareness of the board and its work. When the board was established, it was felt that many potential complaints were not lodged due to fear of police reprisals and distrust of the existing complaint review procedure. However, the rate of complaints received by the civilian board is not greatly in excess of that formerly received by the police department. This quantitative correspondence may be taken as an indication that citizens did complain freely under the more formal internal review system, but a more plausible explanation seems to be the board's lack of publicity. There is a general lack of knowledge of the board's existence and operation. It has received only limited press coverage and has no budget for public information. Until recently, even the City Hall Information Service was unaware in Philadelphia that complaints should be referred to the board's office. A well-organized public information campaign appears to be an essential part of a successful civilian complaint board's program. The appearance of impartiality, vital to the effectiveness of a complaint system, has been somewhat impaired by the Philadelphia procedure. The common situation where the complainant is not represented by counsel and the board is active in developing his case at the hearing. The appearance of a board partial to the complainants is created and police respect for a board weakened. A system of voluntary counsel for complainants to oppose a free counsel, always provided by the Fraternal Order of Police, is being considered by the Philadelphia Board. Such a system could prove very salutary, but it should not prove difficult to establish. A satisfactory expedient might be to authorize the Board's Executive Secretary to present the cases of complainants unable to afford private counsel. If the Executive Secretary is given the role of complainant's representative, it seems desirable that he be an attorney. Since he receives all complaints, he is familiar with all cases, but he does not participate in the decision-making process of the board hearing. The danger of the board's appearance of partiality is not so great. If this expedient is adopted, however, there would be the danger that the secretary's role in negotiating informal settlements might be comprised by the compromised by the development of a prosecutor's attitude, leading him to press for stiff penalties and avoid pre-hearing settlement. The most serious obstacle to the board's attempt to win citizens' confidence in Philadelphia through the appearance of independence is its necessary reliance on the police to investigate complaints. The investigation is crucial not only to the hearing itself, but to the threshold decision of whether a hearing should be granted. The Philadelphia Board has so far found the police investigations and reports to be professionally competent and has the utmost confidence in them. But there are those in the community who feel advisable that any aspect of citizen complaint processing be left in the hands of police. Budgetary limitations make it impossible for the Police Advisory Board to have its own investigatory capacity. It would seem to require little added expense, however, if the board were given the power to review the police investigation and request full or partial reinvestigation where original reports reveal inadequacies. An acute procedural weakness in the Philadelphia Board's operations is its failure to prepare opinions explaining its decisions. Since most of the board members are not lawyers, elaborate legal expositions cannot be expected to accompany each decision. However, a full explanation of the decision and in terms that are understandable to the accused and the complainant would seem desirable. Such formal opinions are a safeguard against arbitrary judgments, enhance the appearance of fairness in the board's proceedings, and provide guidelines for future police conduct and board decisions. Some civil liberties leaders in Philadelphia have expressed dissatisfaction with the board's recommendations of punishment, feeling that the board has been even more lenient than police themselves would have been in many cases. The validity of this assertion is difficult to ascertain. If the board is too lenient, one explanation may be its desire to minimize police opposition in view of the unsteady foundation upon which the board is established. Although the tradition of a civilian complaint board becomes more firmly entrenched as time passes, it seems preferable to give the institution a more substantial base than the executive order which the Philadelphia board now operates under. Codification into the city charter, or at least enactment of a city ordinance, would add needed stability. Another possible explanation for alleged board leniency is lack of experience with police discipline, a defect which is curable by time, and increased board activity. Additionally, the appointment of a police officer to serve on the board could serve to enrich the fund of experience upon which the board may draw in reaching its conclusions. The Harvard note continues and compares the departmental or internal review system, such as that presently used in Minneapolis, and civilian review boards. Having explored the procedural strengths and weaknesses of existing examples of both departmental and civilian review systems, it is appropriate that the general arguments for and objections to both types of institutions be presented and compared. One major advantage of review of citizens' complaints by the police themselves is expertness. The relation of police discipline to the needs and operations of the police force may best be evaluated by high-level officers who face the problems of police administration daily. However, it is not clear that experience in police administration, which qualifies officers to perform the disciplinary function of the complaint system, also qualifies them effectively to redress citizens' complaints. For example, although the Philadelphia police had long experience with the use of handcuffs, it was not until a civilian board made recommendations on the subject that the rules for the handcuff use were reformed. Another factor in favor of departmental systems is the desirability of focusing responsibility for dealing with misconduct in those persons best able to cure it. Police interest in civilian complaints is obvious, but in light of the severe impact of ordinary police activities on civil liberties, this interest seems to be matched by that of the community at large. It is by no means true, however, that police departments operate with no consideration of the general public interest. Many police departments have recently organized community relations units, which maintain contact with school, church, and community organizations. Staff members, frequently representatives of racial and ethnic minorities, explain law enforcement problems to civilians and ascertain for the department the sources of friction between public or segments of the public and police. Another valuable function which could be performed by community relations officers is publicizing the department's complaint procedure and encouraging resort to it wherever the need arises. Even where police have sought to satisfy community interests by procedural reforms or community relations programs, public distrust for an internal complaint review system still often exists. Such distrust is based essentially upon a belief that a police-oriented perspective necessarily colors a complaint review system by police, resulting not only in concealment of officers' past misdeeds, but also in encouragement of further abuse of authority. Even if these attitudes are unjustified in any particular city, the fact that they exist in erode citizen confidence in the complaint mechanism significantly impairs the effectiveness of an internal complaint system. The most strongly advocated alternative to departmental systems is civilian-operated boards, which serve to inject civilian judgment into the appraisal of police conduct and practices. A proper disciplinary system should, of course, take into account both the interest of protecting individuals from improper practices and that of promoting effective law enforcement. While it is true that civilians may exert political pressure on police through a mayor's office or a city council, the influence of civilian judgment is more direct and may be more effective when introduced as an integral part of the disciplinary process. In another major respect, a civilian board has an institutional advantage over an internal complaint system. An internal system may be constructed which provides strong safeguards against dishonesty and disingenuous exoneration of officers by lower echelon persons. But in any complaint system entirely within the police department, the only protection against such faults in the high command is the integrity of the commanders themselves. An independent board, on the other hand, can operate as a check on high as well as low police officials. A chief argument against civilian review systems is that existing remedies are adequate. Where the existing internal review system is effective and has community confidence, this argument should be persuasive. Insofar as the remedies referred to are judicial, however, their adequacy is very doubtful. Another line of argument against civilian review boards is in terms of the effect of such boards on the police. It is claimed that leaving judgment of officers' conduct in possibly unknowledgeable and unsympathetic hands will destroy the morale of the force. The Philadelphia experience has not supported this prediction. The present deputy police commissioner has declared that the morale of the force has in no way been affected by the advisory board. Nor has it been the case, as some critics feared, that the existence of the Philadelphia board has inhibited police officers in the performance of their law enforcement duties. Philadelphia policemen are not threatened with imminent, harsh penalties which cause them to desist from arresting or otherwise coming into contact with potential lawbreakers. In practice, the board has generally been lenient toward an accused officer. It does seem desirable, however, that police be aware of the likelihood of punishment for misconduct in their relations with members of the community. High-ranking police officials have objected that a civilian board reflects on their leadership, giving the impression that they cannot be trusted to discipline their own personnel. It is also argued that it is unfair to hold high echelon officials responsible for discipline while vesting authority to punish in outsiders. It seems proper that, as in Philadelphia, final authority for discipline remain in the department and that the civilian board only recommend punishment. Even strong advocates of civilian boards prefer to limit their power to recommendations. Moreover, police supervisors maintain authority to discipline for infractions not involving civilian complaints, and they retain a great deal of power over their men outside the complaint review system through promotions and changes of assignments. Although incompetent leadership may add impetus to the support for a civilian board, the creation of a civilian board need not reflect adversely upon police leadership. A community which has suffered from ineffectual police leadership in the past may desire to institutionalize the safeguards of a civilian review system to prevent recurrence of past abuses, even though it has complete confidence in the present police administration. Moreover, the existence of a civilian board may enhance citizen confidence in police leadership by posing a clear challenge to police critics to come forward with concrete evidence of official malfeasance. The strongest general argument against civilian boards is that they lack the knowledge and experience to evaluate police actions. It is true that members of the board, having no background in police administration, may be unable to envision the effect of a decision on police operations. But the accused officer and his attorney have the opportunity to explain the significance of a possible decision during any disciplinary hearing. Nor will expertness be required in the many cases where the offense alleged is clearly improper, and the only question is who is telling the truth about the occurrence. It would seem advisable, however, that a police officer sit as one member or more of the board. Since his vote would not outweigh those of the civilian members, his presence on the board should not impair citizen confidence in the system. The officer member of the board could provide insights into police administration problems and gain experience that may be useful to the department in improving its community relations. The foregoing comparison of internal and civilian complaint procedures is in essence an outline and evaluation of abstract arguments and objections. The purpose is to suggest, through contrast, the analytical considerations relevant in deciding which of the two systems would suit the needs of a given community, without attempting to demonstrate that either approach is inherently preferable. where procedures are intelligently designed and conscientiously followed so that the community trusts their integrity, there is no need for an outside review system. Even where close analysis reveals procedural weaknesses in an internal system, but nevertheless the system satisfactorily performs the dual function of maintaining discipline and satisfying complainants, improvement of internal procedures will often be preferable to the adoption of a civilian system. The creation of an external disciplinary agency in such a case might generate unnecessary disruption and distrust and result in problems more grave than the procedural weaknesses in the original internal system. The less drastic and more profitable reform lies in correcting the weaknesses in the otherwise acceptable departmental procedure. On the other hand, where an existing review procedure is basically faulty, and where a potentially inadequate system has been abused or disregarded, sometimes no internal reform can result in a complaint process that citizens will use with confidence. In these circumstances, a civilian board may be the only means through which the interest of aggrieved citizens can be redressed in violations of individual rights can be brought to bear on the discipline of police officers, unquote. This was an evaluation and comparison of internal complaint review procedures with the idea of civilian review boards in a Harvard Law Review note by Sisk and Beryl, published in 1964. In Minnesota, the Minnesota Civil Liberties Union set up an ad hoc committee to discuss and study the problem of civilian review boards and police practices in 1963. The biennial conference of the American Civil Liberties Union in 1964 in Boulder, Colorado, June 21st through the 24th, attended by 125 delegates from the ACLU National Board, National Committee, and all of the ACLU affiliates, with the exception of Oregon and New Mexico, adopted the following recommendation to the National ACLU Board. The concept of an independent civilian police review board to deal with police abuses is one that the ACLU should certainly adopt. But in espousing this technique, we ought to emphasize that such a board can help provide fair decisions for the police as well as civilians. It was reported that the Philadelphia Review Board has operated under this premise. Additional argument in favor of such boards as an asset to police enforcement of the law is seen in the operation of the Philadelphia Board, where information regarding police problems that police authorities themselves did not know existed has been reported to top police authorities. The comment was also made that police are not adequately protected, and there are cases in which police are summarily dismissed for unsubstantiated charges of police brutality, another reason why independent boards should be created to sift the facts of each case. Some opposition was expressed to the boards because they might be used to erode the exclusionary evidence rule as laid down by the Supreme Court in the Mapp case. It was countered that rather than attack improper police search and seizures in the courts, relief for such abuses might be more effectively sought through the review board. In September of 64, the National ACLU Board unanimously approved the biennial conference recommendation. The following is an excerpt of the minutes of the ACLU in 1964. Mr. Ennis recommended adoption of the conference's recommendation outlining the nature of the controversy between law enforcement officers and civil liberties organizations over this issue. After a discussion which more fully developed some of this controversy and brought out the union's own unique relationship through the Greater Philadelphia ACLU to the Philadelphia Review Board's establishment and experience, the recommendation was adopted on motion approved unanimously. The 1963 Ad Hoc Committee of the Minnesota Civil Liberties Union Board, headed by board member Dr. Matthew Stark, was composed of 11 members from the community. The committee met in December of 1963 and a number of times in the following months. They studied legislation and operation of review boards in Philadelphia and Rochester, New York, and materials concerning review board operations and complaint experience. It was noted in a Philadelphia ACLU memo in 1965 by Spencer Cox that until the establishment of the board, the police department had never disciplined a policeman because of a wrong done to a civilian on the complaint of a civilian. In Minnesota, the Minnesota Advisory Committee to the United States Civil Rights Commission recently became aware of several incidents between local police officers and members of minority groups. It therefore undertook to determine whether minority groups were being denied equal protection of the laws by local law enforcement agencies. On August 7th and 8th, 1963, the advisory committee held hearings in the federal courthouse in Minneapolis, calling 32 witnesses representing federal, state, county, and municipal officials. Community organizations and private citizens also appeared to give testimony before the committee. In addition, three witnesses appeared in executive session on August 7th. The Minnesota Advisory Commission drafted a report on their findings, which has yet only received limited distribution. This report discussed discriminatory law enforcement practices, police administrative practices, inadequate legal counsel, administrative problems and attitudes, and among its conclusions stated the following, quote, "The committee finds that minority group members generally lack faith that their complaints will be dealt with properly by procedures now current in the police departments in Minneapolis and St. Paul." Continuing the quote, "It concludes, therefore, that it would be advisable to institute an impartial police review program with full citizen participation, either by appointing a new body to monitor it, or to utilize the services of an appropriate existing body, such as the Mayor's Commission on Human Relations," unquote. The Minnesota Civil Liberties Union Ad Hoc Committee on Police Review Boards then recommended MCLU adopt as a major policy objective the institution of a statewide program of independent police and community relations and advisory boards on the state and city levels. In December 1965, the MCLU board passed the following resolution. "The Minnesota Civil Liberties Union endorses the idea of independent civilian police review boards called Police Community Relations and Advisory Boards, and the MCLU board will implement its policy of the creation of such boards along the line of the model legislation proposed." MCLU then, in its report on police review boards, set forth a model ordinance. The ordinance, which could be adopted by any local community or which could be embodied in a statute, states as its policy the promotion of better, closer, and more effective relations between the police and the community, being in the interest and welfare of the whole community. It is therefore established for the city of whatever city establishes it, a board to be called the Police and Community Relations and Advisory Board. It then sets up the model ordinance would then set up a board of any number of members appointed by the mayor. City officers and employees are directed to cooperate with the board in carrying out its duties. The board has the power to appoint paid staff within budgetary limitations of any appropriations adopted by the governmental subdivision adopting the law. The board, by majority vote of its members, may adopt rules and regulations to govern its operations consistent with fair procedures. The board shall make reports to the mayor or the executive officer of the governmental subdivision. Among the duties is a instruction to plan and carry out programs by itself and in cooperation with other existing organizations and agencies in the community, to acquaint citizens of the community with the operation of their police department and with the citizens' responsibilities in the maintenance of law and order so as to secure increased and greater public cooperation with police, to plan and carry out programs to acquaint the general public with the growing professionalization of the police force, to serve and act as liaison between representatives of the police department and community, and to receive, investigate, hear, and determine complaints of alleged misconduct to civilians by personnel of the police department in performance of their duties. The term misconduct shall include, but not be limited to, mistreatment, abusive language, false arrest, unreasonable or unwarranted use of force, unreasonable searches or seizures, denial of civil rights, or discrimination because of race, color, creed, or national origin. It directs that complaints be submitted to the board in writing and be signed by the complainant. A copy of the complaint is forwarded to the chief of police, who is instructed to assign the necessary personnel to investigate. Within 10 days after receipt of the complaint, the police chief shall submit to the board a report containing evidence discovered relating to the complaint. If the chief is unable to complete his investigation within that time, the ordinance directs that he submit an interim report detailing the progress every 10 days until a final report is submitted. The board has the power, with assistance of any staff it may have, to initiate complaints and make any independent investigations it deems necessary. There is set forth a hearing procedure, guaranteeing written notice of the hearing to the complainant and police personnel and their respective counsel. A copy of the complaint is sent to police personnel involved with a notice of hearing. And before the board may make its recommendations, police personnel shall be entitled to a public hearing. Hearings are conducted by the board. The complaint and the police personnel involved shall have the right to be represented by counsel and may offer testimony themselves and by witnesses and have the right of cross-examination. There is also a recommendation that the board shall send its recommendations to the mayor, the chief of police, the complainant, and the public personnel involved, and that the recommendations be made public. After considering the board's recommendations and determining the matter, the chief of police reports his determination to the mayor and to the board. The foregoing has been a summary of a report on police review boards published by the Minnesota Civil Liberties Union. We invite your inquiry and comments on these programs or on the subject matter in this program. If you would like a copy of the MCLU report on police review boards, send your name and address to MCLU 925 Upper Midwest Building, Minneapolis, Minnesota. That's Minnesota Civil Liberties Union, Upper Midwest Building, Minneapolis, Minnesota. This has been an educational program produced by the Minnesota Civil Liberties Union as an educational service.